John O'Looney.
Hi.
I have to apologize for keeping you waiting, but no problem. I think you probably found some of the stuff that you heard interesting.
To be honest with you, he's selling ice cubes to the Eskimos. I know what's going on. I'm desperate, really, to see what difference I can make now to contribute in, to end this madness.
Well, the most important thing is, of course, everyone knows your video, everyone found it extremely, not just interesting, but also moving, because the scale of what you found out in your profession is beyond anything that anyone ever expected. It's so sad to see how. I think you're the only one. You did say in your video, you said that you were in touch with many other.
I've had about 50 or 60 funeral workers from within different positions in the industry, and they've all said the same thing. They're all terrified, you know, and very, very, very frightened of the repercussions, and very, very frightened because we fully understand that if somebody's prepared to commit genocide and democide on this scale. Do you know what won't they do to anyone that speaks out? We've kind of seen it, haven't we? I'm committed. I'm committed. I've got no choice but to be honest about my experience. And it's very interesting to hear about the different drug, the remdesivir or whatever it was, that the kidney failure and the fluid. And I see that in deceased when they come in. You know, they're bloated. Mm-hmm. Bloated. That's been going on for a while. Interestingly, many of the families that I speak to who believe they've lost loved ones to COVID didn't actually go into hospital with COVID. They acquired COVID in the hospitals. And that leads me to believe it's probably some sort of agent that it's either a symptom of the care they're receiving, from the remdesivir or perhaps from midazolam overdose, or perhaps some sort of agent they're being given in the hospitals is my suspicion. It's certainly man-made and man-driven. I know what's going on. I've picked up three people, all under 35 this week, all jab recipients. You know, one of them is a 28-year-old girl who passed away in hospital shortly after having the injection. Her family are absolutely beside themselves with anger and rage. And they know, but of course, nobody's listening to them. You know, when will this end? At what point will people wake up and see this for what it is? Or are we destined to get kind of funneled into the slaughterhouse? I really don't know.
But can you give us like a little report about what you experienced like in the last 1.5 years, like looking at the COVID deaths and then today, maybe other reasons?
So but basically what happened as a funeral director in 2019 in November, I got approached by a family who'd lost a loved one in the neighbouring borough of Northampton. And they complained that the hospital wouldn't allow them to have a visit in the chapel of rest that's attached to the hospital mortuary. So I said, look, don't worry, I'll go over there and pick that deceased up and you can spend time with them in the funeral home, which I did. And I kind of asked them, you know, why wouldn't you let this family see their loved one? And they opened the viewing room door and lo and behold, there was like an isolation tent in there for deceased that were infectious. And I kind of said, well, what's that for? And they said, there's something horrible coming. And that was my first kind of introduction to COVID. The word COVID wasn't used. I kind of left and spoke to family members and said, look, I've been told there's something horrible coming. And then the news broke in early 2020. Pretty quickly, I had the BBC in touch with me, asking me to promote the hysteria, which I did unwittingly, you know, thinking I was helping. They attended and they briefed me on the questions and answers that they would be doing. And I kind of gave them all the hysteria they wanted. And I beat myself up now because I didn't know any better at the time. I took a call from a company who said that they were part of the resilience team, the kind of pandemic team, who said that they would be calling every week. All of the undertakers across the country were being contacted, and they would ask how many people we'd had in, what our capacity was for deceased, where these deceased had come from, how many were COVID and how many were not. And it wasn't too long before they deliberately steered me. And by that, I was picking people up who were dying from terminal cancer. And he was saying, well, there must be COVID because there was COVID in there and I've got to put them down as a COVID. Everyone was a COVID death, you know, despite the fact that there was no doctor in attendance, no test being done. They were all COVID. Even one guy that was run over, you know, had families coming in really upset because their loved ones had died from cancer. And yet they were being put down as a COVID death, and they were spam testing these people as they were dying with PCR tests on 45 cycles. It's just inhumane. I don't know how anyone can treat another human like that, but that's what they were doing. And then they were all down as COVID deaths. And then in March and April, the phone rang. We were on the TV here. The government advertised that they suspected there were going to be lots of deaths in exclusively in care homes. And I remember at the time thinking, well, how do they know that? You know, how can a virus specifically target buildings and not the community, you know? And sure enough, the phone began ringing. There was a government directive to transfer everyone from hospitals to care homes, and they died shortly after in those care homes. Again, there was no doctor present, no COVID test present. They didn't appear to be COVID patients. I suspect that they were probably euthanized with midazolam. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, you can use Freedom of Information Acts to obtain the figures of midazolam that's been procured. And those numbers have gone up from between 350 and 1,000%. In fact, that I was told they built an installation in France to keep up with demand from the British government. They've ordered that much in, you know. So that kind of lasted about 2.5-3 weeks, and then that abruptly ended. And then the death rate was perfectly normal. And the figures locally for cremation would you know, agree with that. So despite the best efforts, there was no pandemic death rate in 2020. It wasn't. In fact, it was busier in 2019 overall. So I kind of suspected what was going on, and I had a horrible gut feeling that something really wasn't right, just because of what was going on. There wasn't a pandemic, and yet they were bleating this hysteria. And then November, December came, and we were doing funerals. It wasn't really overly busy. And I kind of said to a few people, I wonder, they widely advertised that in January they were going to begin vaccinating people. They found this wonderful life-saving cure in this vaccine. There isn't a vaccine at all. And they began vaccinating on January the 6th, and the death rate went through the roof instantly. I've never known a death rate like it. That was pandemic level the moment they started putting needle in arms. And that went on for about 12 weeks. And then it just abruptly stopped. And now, you know, people are lining up to have these vaccines. They're going into schools, coercing children, and slowly funneling everyone via bullying, harassment, job threats, financial pressure, down into this you know, violating every human rights law and the Nuremberg Code to kill people, you know. So very early on in the process, I had a family who'd lost a young girl to cancer in six. She was only six, bless her. And this was in very early February time, 2020. And they asked me to wash and dress their little girl, and they wanted to spend time with her. And this was at a time when all other funeral directors were taking coffins to the hospital because they were all so scared, you know, and sealing people in them there, no washing, no dressing, just the body bag placed in, the lid on, and maybe the clothes laid on top. And that was it. But I agreed to do that. And then I kind of thought, well, if I can do that for them, I can do that for everyone. So that's what I've done. And I've washed and dressed everyone the whole way through COVID without a mask, because I couldn't get any because everyone was panic buying them. And let's face it, a mask is no protection. It's not going to save you from a virus, you know. You'd have to be an idiot to believe they would. All it does is promote things like pneumonia, bacterial pneumonia and stuff like that. It's not helpful. It's actually very damaging, you know, so to wear one consistently, mentally and physically. But people just, we live in a society, don't we, where people are kind of more interested in Netflix and a flat screen TV and a warm duvet and how many likes they can get on Facebook. They've took their eye off the ball, and we've let these demons get into positions of influence and power. And this is the end result, you know, this is the end result. So last Tuesday, the 21st, I went to Westminster. I was summoned to go to a meeting with Sir Graham Brady, who's the commissioner of the 1992 Commission. The 1992 Committee is a very senior Tory politician. And I sat there with the likes of Dolores Cahill, Tess Daly, is it? Or Tess Wyatt. Mm-hmm. Mike Yeadon and a plethora of, I've got all their email addresses, you'll know them all. Mm-hmm. They're very outspoken, and we all gave testimony in our respective fields, and we gave evidence based on our experience and our expertise within those fields, and the evidence was damning. We told Sir Graham exactly the damage that was being done. The science was explained as to how that was going to happen over a period of between 2 and 5 years to recipients, and the fact that children would also be sterilized as well. He listened. He left saying that he would do what he could, but he couldn't make any promises. And that was where we left. And there was a great feeling of frustration and anger and defeat. And we can't decide whether he's complicit. I personally feel that perhaps he might be. Mm-hmm. And perhaps he gave us audience just to see what we knew, you know, and report back kind of thing. I really don't know. But I went to the meeting with a lot of hope and left feeling really upset, to be honest with you, because they're still going into schools now, nailing these kids with God knows what. And, you know, I'm hearing now children are being injured and dying as a result. You know, this week alone, I've got three people in, 28-year-old, a 32-year-old, a 33-year-old. You know, they're all jab recipients. If this needs to stop, it needs to stop now, because, you know, the future for all of us is very, very grim.
So, like, when the vaccination process started, or the injection process started in January in England, like, yes, you said, like 12 weeks after that, you saw a lot of you know, a spike in basically in death.
No, almost immediately.
No, 12 weeks later. Sorry, starting immediately, but it stopped after like 12 weeks, you said.
Yeah, so about 12 weeks after the really intense death rate, it kind of petered out and it went back to normal. And I would suggest there's clearly different batches being used. And the reason I say that is because of the wide range of injuries that I'm seeing. So, for example, one guy came in and his mum went blind not long after having it. Another guy came in and his father was paralyzed from the waist down almost immediately. So then he was seen as vulnerable. So then they took him for a second jab 3 or 4 weeks later, and he was dead the following day. I've had clients come in where they've continually bleeding, non-stop bleeding for female clients, and they've reported that to me, and that apparently is where the womb lining falls away as a result of these injections, you know, effectively sterilizing them, so because they can't carry a fetus. So there are such a wide range of different injuries, you know, that I'm seeing and hearing firsthand. And obviously, because I've come out public now, a lot of people are reaching out to me for help. They don't know who else to speak to, because the local health authority won't help them. You know, I had a woman, an Irish-spoken woman who lived locally, call me. She had an autistic child of 14, a son, and he was injected and he's turned into a vegetable.
Oh.
You know, he was fully functional. He had a good life, good quality of life. She was coerced. And now the health authority, they won't engage with her at all. You know,
they're saying, well, that's nothing, not related, and we don't want to look into it, or like they're
and
just.
And that's the end of it. Yeah, that's the end of the conversation. Yeah. So, I'm seeing all of these one in a million things constantly. You know, I'm getting people out reaching out to me. I've had nurses reach out to me, doctors. There's a guy called Ray who's an ICU nurse in Australia. And he works in ICU with children, and he's surrounded by children that were herded into the Olympic Stadium a number of weeks ago. And many of those are now dying, and there's nothing he can do for them. That's his day, is filled with surrounded by dying children killed by the state.
And the children are dying of what specifically?
Multiple organ failure, heart conditions, blood clots. You know, I spoke to a nurse that told me, a friend who was also a nurse, has got 12 patients on the ward at the moment with blood clots in their arms, for example. You know, so something that was unheard of. You know, you get one blood clot once in a blue moon, and now it's a regular occurrence, you know, in jab recipients specifically. So, you know, when will this stop? When will it stop?
Unless people rise up, it will not stop, I don't think. I think we are moving in the right direction, but I'm afraid if you look at the lethargy, maybe you can call it that, of many people, it's probably going to take many more deaths.
I think it will. And the danger there is that they up their game. As people wake up and they sense that, you know, I feel that they're moving forward quicker with more urgency. Yeah. So these death rates in these jab recipients is going to be called another variant, the same as all the children that are going to die. They're going to call it a variant. They're going to urge us to protect the children, and they're going to mandate on the back of that. And then the manhunt begins. So what do we do then? Do we start hiding in woods? Do we do what they did in the Second World War and begin hiding children under floorboards? Or, you know, I've got a 10-year-old son and he doesn't want to have this vaccination because he lives in a family business and he sees what it's doing. You know, I don't want him to have it. Why are my rights as a parent not respected? They're clearly there, my human rights and the Nuremberg Code, and these are being ignored. You know, we have children, 12-year-old children, coerced into making a life and death decision. Children that can't buy a beer, they can't vote, they can't have sex, they can't drive a car, but they can make a life or death decision with an experimental injection that I can see firsthand is killing people and maiming people. And people like yourself can concur with that. And we get audience with people like Sir Graham Brady. So why was a phone call not made there and then to say, stop now, and let's look at this again. Let's look at the data. You know, nobody's doing that. And that suggests to me that they're complicit, you know, and this is a global movement, and different countries are simply trying different ways of achieving the same end, and that's a regular 100% coverage on this. The future is really very, very dark unless we do something very quickly.
Yes, I agree with that. But we are doing the best we can. Each and every one of us is doing the best they can.
I know.
And I know you are too. There's always hope. And we are moving in the right direction, just not fast enough. That's why it's so sad to have to conclude that it'll probably take many more deaths until finally people will begin to understand that it's not that there's not a deadly disease out there, but it is being created by the jabs, through the jabs.
It's man-made and it's man-driven. Yeah. 100%. I've got no doubt in my mind.
Absolutely. I agree. From everything we've heard from all of the experts, there's no other conclusion we can draw from all of this. The most important or the most difficult step to take, as I just mentioned in my talk with Shimon Janowitz, is you have to understand that there's not mistakes that are being made. This is being done intentionally.
Yes.
And in order to understand that, most people refuse to understand that, because in order to understand that, it'll simultaneously force you to understand that your own government is working against you and trying to literally kill you.
100%. And I think therein lies the key, really. I don't think there's any point in us. It's going to be a great challenge when you're trying to use the legal system that they actually tailor to their own needs. You know, it's going to be very difficult to do that. And I think what I'm seeing firsthand is people, you know, something so horrific that can't be true, it isn't true. And it's like a self-defense mechanism, isn't it? Whereas the realization for these people that they've been deceived and might have actually walked over the edge of a cliff is going to be impossible to accept. And also, I think there may well have been an advocate system in place with these vaccines. And the way that, for me, works is, imagine if you had 100 vaccines and 85 of them were just placebo. You've then recruited 85% of recipients as advocates, haven't you? Because they've had no ill effects, no symptoms. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get sick and they're not going to die. And the 15% of those that I believe are designed to maim and kill, those are your COVID victims. So I kind of toyed with myself, you know, and thought, how are they going to get those people that have had placebos? I couldn't understand because I knew what was going on, but I couldn't understand how they're going to get people that have had placebos. And then they announced several boosters a year for the next 5 years. So that's how that's going to work, you know. It is the genius of it is immense. The genius is the most, you know, you tell me a politician that wouldn't be happy with an 85% majority. It's overwhelming, isn't it?
If your theory is right, you know, the good news would be that we have a lot of placebos for a lot of people.
And I'm getting a lot of people. I mean, I would hasten to add, this is purely conjecture. This is theory, because I couldn't understand why. And if you think about it logically, if you lined up and just give lethal injections to people and they all started dropping down dead, in 6 months, it wouldn't take very long before the uptake would stop, would it? So I believe that's what they're doing, is they're using this advocate system. And, you know, these people who have had no ill effects and received a placebo, they'll be only too keen to get a booster, you know, and they'll be only too keen to advertise that booster. And I would suggest there's a small percentage, and that if you think about it logically, if you're lucky, it's a lottery. So when you go and get an injection, it's a lottery, and you're either lucky or you're not. Can you be lucky three times a year for the next 5 years?
Or longer, because what's really going on is this is what we learned from one of my clients, who told me that in October of 2020, 2 months before the shots, the jab started, the head of the, or the chairman of the German Bundestag's Health Commission told him that it's not going to stop with these two shots of BioNTech Pfizer, but it's going to continue. One shot every 6 months.
Yeah,
now that tells you the whole story right there.
Of course it does. You know, what do people not see?
And it's if your theory is correct, and I think that Wolfgang Wodak agrees with you. I think he says so. If your theory is correct, then what's going on right now is it's a game of it's not gambling, it's Russian roulette.
Yes.
It's Russian roulette.
That's exactly what it is, yes. Mm. Yeah, and I would suggest, you know, you need a large majority of placebos to use those advocates. Inadvertently, they're recruiting people to kill people. You know, they're advocates, aren't they? They're recruiting advocates, and they only have, you know, who wouldn't have a placebo and not be totally happy about receiving that for many months? You know, of course you would, because it's not hurt you and you're not getting sick. Because there is no COVID.
Yeah, that's precisely his stance as well. You know, Dr. Wolfgang Wodak?
Not really, to be honest. I'm kind of sold. I know what I know.
Yeah,
you know, I've got a very.
You are extremely well informed. So I suspect that you're not getting your information solely from the mainstream media.
No. I've kind of when you're on the coal face, you see it firsthand, and then when you go public, a lot of people reach out to you and they fill in the missing pieces. And when you sit with people like Tess Daly and Mike Eden and co, they furnish you with the facts, the science. And, you know, I'm very well versed on exactly what's going on. And, you know, I get the phone calls from the families to say they've lost their mum or their dad or their son or their daughter on a weekly basis. I now do the funerals of murder victims.
Yeah.
Some families are aware, some families are totally oblivious. Do you know, interestingly, I had a family who came in to arrange a funeral yesterday. They're all vaccinated. They all look really sick. And one of them is just, we arranged it for the 8th. The family have tested positive and now are sick. So now it's got to be delayed for 10 days. And, do you know, I just can't believe that these people can't see it. And they're very aggressive as well. If you kind of just gently nudge them and say, well, have you thought about it like this or that? Or, you know, they just can't see it. Some people are waking up. They're reaching out to me and say, I totally get you. I didn't realize I won't be having a booster. You know, I would suggest that will probably change when they threaten to lead them off to a concentration camp.
Yes.
So I never will. I'll die in a concentration camp. And I would suspect that I'll probably be a COVID victim. And who will be remotely surprised people dying in a quarantine camp from COVID?
Well, I don't think it's going to come to that point because we are joining forces pretty much with everyone who is in the, I guess you can call them the resistance movement. And and it's us, it's our people who are the really smart ones, who are the intelligent ones. It's not, you know, we've interviewed a whole group of professors of psychology and psychiatry, and one of them is a professor from Belgium, Professor Desmond, and he explained to us that it is so hard to reach those who have already gotten vaccinated because it's like, no, he said it's not like hypnosis, it is hypnosis. 30% of the people have fallen victim to this constant narrative of panic, panic, panic. We all have to be afraid. Unless we get vaccinated, we're all going to die. 30% of the people have actually fallen victim to this in the form of hypnosis, and they cannot be approached. They cannot hear us anymore. But there's still 40% of the people who are sort of sitting on the fence and don't know which way to fall down off the fence. Many of them have in the meantime begun to ask questions. I just want to explain this. Dr. Vodak, he's the one who stopped the swine flu, which was their first attempt at a pandemic some 11 years ago. He was then in a position of power because he was a member of the German parliament and he was also a member of the Council of Europe. That's how they found out that what they called a pandemic then, by the way, by changing the definition of what a pandemic is, you know, before that, it used to be a disease that spreads worldwide, number one. Element number two, with many serious cases of illness, and number three, many cases of death. Then they got rid of the latter two elements, and now it's only a worldwide disease. So any flu can be made into a pandemic.
In fact, they nearly killed me with the swine flu jab.
Really?
Yeah. I took it. I didn't know. You know, I kind of asthmatic, an ex-smoker, and I had the swine flu jab, and I was really, really, really ill. I nearly died. I thought I was going to die. I'll be honest with you, and that was the last time I ever took any jab of any description, because, you know, and they're harassing me constantly. You know, I'm a high-risk person. I can tell you I've washed and dressed over 100 COVID victims without a mask, many of them still warm because they've streamlined the system for collection. You know, there are no doctors or police in attendance now. It's literally the care home rings the doctor, the doctor says, call the funeral director. So I'm collecting these people still very much warm. Do you know? So I'm sure if they were infectious, they would have been. And I haven't had a day off work. My wife's helped me. She's fine. My embalmer's helped me the whole time. He's 55. He's a heart attack survivor from 10 years ago. And he's fine. You know, so I'm in no doubt in my mind. There is no pandemic. I've spoke to doctors, nurses. I've had nurses of 30 and 40 years reach out to me and tell me, you know, they're being pushed out of the job. And these people are in the same circle. They know what these jabs are doing. Many of them, they won't take these jabs, so they'll be pushed out of their jobs. You know, that makes the whole situation worse in the hospitals. And that's all part of the plan, isn't it? Do you know? It's all part of the plan. I suppose I see what's happening on my heart breaks because I know today in many British schools, there'll be kids, their lives are changed or forever, or they're going to die. You know, as a result, I want action now, right now. You know, it's terrible. It's terrible. It's horrible walking through crowds of people that laugh and joke, not realizing what's going on, totally oblivious, and knowing what you know. And it brings to mind the old thing is ignorance really is bliss.
Yeah, until it catches up with them.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, very true. Very true. Would I rather not know? Sometimes I wished I didn't, so that I could have a peaceful weekend, you know, without worrying about it and without worrying about who's going to come through the door next that I haven't been killed. It's terrible. It's terrible. I certainly, you know, they say history is written by the winners, don't they? Let's hope that we do come out on top and that history records this terrible crime against mankind and we are successful. Will we? I really don't know. In fact, I saw a very interesting video on Stu Peters, and it was by, I don't know if you've seen it, the doctor's name was Dr. Carrie Medej, and she'd used a very, very it's a really strong telescope, and looked to these very closely, one of these particular vaccines. And it was horrific what was in there. It was horrific. There was actually a living entity in one of them that looked like an octopus. It was bizarre. Mm. I've never seen anything like it. That video for me, and she showed various slides, photographs that they took. And it was, why would people want this inside them?
Because they don't know it.
But when you tell people, they just won't believe you. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest with you, my brother is a sheet metal worker. He runs a factory, and I kind of explained to him, and we've ended up falling out. You know, we don't speak anymore because he just can't accept. He's double jab recipient now. He's probably had his booster as well. Mm-hmm. He cannot accept that. And I said to him, look, you're a sheet metal worker. I'm on the coal face. I wouldn't lie to you. You know, why would I lie and put my own family at risk? And they just can't see it. And it's a very clever game. It's all part of the strategy, isn't it? Divide and conquer.
Yeah.
You know, the BLM movement, and everything else, just to divide everyone up, because we're easier to conquer, you know, if we're not together. The anti-Muslim rhetoric is a typical example, you know. Mm. Let's divide everyone, you know. My feeling is that, you know, your families are just as important as mine, and that's why I speak out, because I know what's going on, and it's wrong, and it's indefensible, and it's pure evil, pure evil.
That's, you know, what we think too. I would, yeah. You know, if we got all of those who have gotten the jabs, if we got them to take two steps backward and put themselves in the position that they were in a year and a half ago, and told them then what was going to happen, that they would all be wearing masks that look like coffee filters and make them look like they're idiots, that they would be receiving jabs with stuff that has not been tested. There are no medical studies underlying these so-called vaccines. They would have told us, go to hell. You're stupid. Go take your pills. Go see a doctor. Something like that. Yeah, and all of a sudden,
small steps, just a little bit at a time, little bit at a time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this legislation, of course, is being kind of slipped via the back door last thing on a Sunday evening, you know, when people are just... You know, people are watching Netflix, people are going to work, people are worrying about how they're going to pay the bills that they keep increasing, the electricity bill, the power bill has just gone up phenomenally for everyone.
Yeah.
400,000 businesses have gone bang in the UK alone, you know, and yet there are 600 new billionaires in the UK.
Whoa.
That's really crazy. Yeah, can I ask you about this BBC interview that, that you
so
did?
Yeah, so basically very early on in the process, I believe it was March 2020, and it's out there in the domain because a couple of people have sent me the link in the past, and basically they contacted me because they know I'm a local funeral director, and I'm, you know, I've always been happy to speak to people, and they kind of said, look, we need to, obviously we're really worried about this COVID, we need to come and do an interview. They came out and they spent longer briefing me than they did actually filming and asking the questions, you know, and they kind of very carefully orchestrated every question basically for me to promote the hysteria, you know, and in honesty, I was happy to do that because it was very early on in the game and I believed it. You know, if you go to a hospital and they say to you, this deceased is in a body bag that has HIV or TB, you're going to listen. Trust me. You're going to listen. You're not going to jeopardize your own safety. And this was no exception. You know, they told us all there was a deadly pandemic and it was killing people. And they showed us footage of people falling in the streets in China and people believe it. Why would I disbelieve it? You know, this is my government and telling me that. But it was only really for the fact this little girl died and I washed and dressed her. And then I kind of thought, well, if I can do that for her, I can do it for everyone. And that's what I've done. And I slowly came to realize this is just lies. It's not true. It's not true. You know, and I had other funeral directors sending people to me, referring clients to me because I was the only one that would wash and dress all the way through, you know. So I know what's going on. I know what's going on. I've got an idea. It's pretty pointless trying to reason with governments because they won't accept it. I mean, interestingly, I'm hearing through the grapevine the New South Wales Premier has resigned. Apparently so, yeah. Yeah, it was one of my colleagues here told me that news about an hour ago. So how true that is, I don't know. But apparently it's because it's been discovered and uncovered. She's been taking tens of millions of dollars in bribes.
Wow,
from
that would be
yeah. So the it's the yeah.
Is that, yes. It seems to be true. I mean, yes. We've gotten some confirmation on this piece of information.
Yeah.
You know that she, too, is a graduate of this Global yes. Young Leaders Program of the WEF,
yes.
right?
Yes. And
so it's all about corruption.
Yeah, of course it is. Does it lend itself to what we are saying, or does it discredit us?
It makes us Nazi, right-wing.
Yeah, of course. And this is what I'm saying, you know. And the same people will even be saying this is we're led away.
Yeah. No, I think they're coming apart at the seams on the other side.
I really hope so. We
will have to walk a few more miles, I believe, but we're gathering speed. We're picking up speed. We're bringing together more and more people. It's all
Good.
Of us together.
Good.
It's
Good.
All of our efforts together, combined
yes.
effort that is pushing us in the right direction.
And that
will push them over the brink. I am absolutely certain.
Well, do you know, if I can ever be of any help, you know, you can always ask me. I've been inundated, interestingly, thousands of emails and phone calls and from doctors and nurses, and it's been really challenging. You know, my wife has really suffered with the strain of it all, and so it's really tough. But I have to keep talking because I know what the truth is.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I've got two choices, if I say nothing, I might be able to duck and dive for another, 12 months, 18 months, then they'll close me down anyway, you know, or I can speak out now and hope that I can kind of gather some momentum and people will wake up and this madness can end.
Yes, we all feel the same way. There's no use in ducking. I have some colleagues, and I know some pilots, Lufthansa pilots, and from other airlines as well, who have decided that they're going to leave the country. But all you do is you buy time, because it's only a matter of time until they're there too.
Of course,
so we have to keep fighting here.
Yeah, I kind of speak out. I mean, my wife is obviously very concerned for our family here and now. But like I said to her, do you know, it's just as important. Your family is just as important as mine. Why would I not speak out? Your grandchildren or your children, they're just as important as my child.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I not speak out? I have a moral compass, do you know, I can't stay silent because I know what the future holds and I've got a critical mind. Mm-hmm. And I look to the future and I know what the future, I can see it unfolding. And everything that I've said would happen has happened. So, you know, I hope that we do beat these bastards, you know, because that's what they are.
We will, John. Wolfgang wants to ask you a question.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello.
I have a question because you are in this job for a long time already. You're working many. How many years did you work?
So I've done about 15 years in total now.
Okay, so you experience also the swine flu in your profession.
So I began doing this back in about 2008. I started. I'm not sure when the swine flu was, but I was really ill with the swine flu. Yeah,
this was 2009. Yes, because I'm interested. Do you get the diagnosis? Of the people who died from, do you get the diagnosis?
So by that you mean death certificate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So the death certificate I see on occasion. We don't need them as a funeral director, but inevitably when you engage with a family, that family, you know, what happened to mum? What happened to dad? And I get really close mm-hmm. to them, and they tell me they're really forthcoming. So the main deaths that I'm seeing now are heart attack. Stroke from blood clot, either one being from blood clot, or multiple organ failure, or the occasional COVID death they can relabel, mm-hmm. you know, where people have died from these things and it's been relabeled as a COVID death. Mm-hmm. Some families are blissfully unaware, some families are aware and they're very angry, and all of them are JAB recipients. And bear in mind that this runs in conjunction with the regular death rate that we would have anyway. You know, so
I would be interested whether you recognize that in former years, so 10 years ago or longer, the diagnosis flu was given very often.
There's no flu deaths now.
I mean 10 years ago.
Yes.
Did you have flu cases at the death?
Yeah, of course. Winter flu, it was called. Winter flu. Last year was the first year ever that I've not known a single winter flu death. They were all relabeled as COVID.
Yes, we know that the flu was the same as influenza, because they did not distinguish between the viruses. They did not use to distinguish, so they just called it flu.
Yes.
And the only thing they were looking for was the influenza. That means only one of more than 100 viruses who make the same symptoms and who may lead to death too. And so the flu is a summary and is a sample of many viruses, respiratory viruses.
Yes.
And in former times, we only look for influenza. And now they only look for corona. So they pick out one single virus and tell us the story about that.
It's pretty obvious to me that the whole thing has not really been about COVID. You know, when you're filling people full of remdesivir, people will then have kidney failure and they'll drown in fluid in their lungs as their lungs fill up. That's what's happening. When you fill people up with things like midazolam, that they'll die because their breathing is just, you know, it's one of the drugs used in the cocktail for lethal injection in countries where they have that. So you'll know. I don't know. I'm selling this ice to the Eskimos, aren't I?
But we had Dr. Ryan Brian Artis, rather, in one of our sessions, and he explained this in great detail to us.
Yeah, and I see this in the bodies when they come in because they're bloated, full of fluid.
Oh,
you know, so the fingers are swollen, and you know the faces are swollen. You can see it, and you can press the skin and leave an indent in the skin with your finger because they're so full of fluid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I know the people I suspect have been killed with this.
That's exactly what Brian Artis told us.
And I see this on the coal face, yes.
Mm, mm. Yeah, because this is one of the... This is... I think, if I remember correctly, he told us that Fauci made this a mandatory treatment using remdesivir.
On what clinical basis?
The clinical basis is the one that Brian Artis found out about, and that is that it was used in a number of trials and it had to be pulled out of the trials because it was deadly.
Yeah, exactly.
So you that know. Was the clinical basis on which he ordered this to as a medical protocol. It's right. But and there's something that is special about Britain because, maybe it's not special, but it is special insofar as this is the information that's come out. This it may be the very same in our country. It's just that we haven't learned about it yet. And that is the medication that is, what is it called? I think it's an anesthetic.
Midazolam.
Midazolam,
I would hasten to add, is a brand name. It's probably going to be known by different names globally, mm-hmm. but here it's called midazolam.
And they used it, and you did describe that the purchase of midazolam went up, between 350 and 1,000%.
Yeah. So I've got people that I've been speaking to who have been sending out Freedom of Information Acts to the various health authorities, and those are the figures that have come back. And basically the way that works is they ask for the procurement amounts from 2015 to date, and you can see the jump there, you know. So the argument that was given was, oh, this was used to intubate patients, sedate them. Just wasn't, not in that, and they've used it all, you know, they've used it all. And I never once saw a ventilator, I never once saw a COVID test, I never once saw a doctor, but they're all COVID tests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're arguing with people who are not prepared to listen, and they're just pushing forward. You know, at what point will we see change? I really don't know. It seems to be getting harder, not easier, you know, to avoid this madness. And
I think it'll get a little bit worse, maybe a lot worse, until we turn the tide. I think that's the tragic truth. I think there's nothing we can do about it, except we can continue with what we're doing. What you're doing is definitely going to have an impact, just like everything we're doing has an impact. But this is really I'm very grateful for your testimony, so to speak. You're going to be one of the experts. Ultimately, you're going to be one of the experts that people will have to turn to, that the courts of law will have to turn to.
I hope that I live to see that.
I'm sure you will. All of us will. Well, John, I'm really grateful.
I'm really grateful to you, because it's a message that I can't tell people without people like you. And I feel like I'm standing in the trenches with you. Never doubt for a moment that I'm not fighting for truth, because that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I'm going to keep doing it and keep doing it. And you have my thanks and admiration. And thank you so much.
And vice versa. John, despite all of this, try and have a good weekend. Go out into nature.
I'll try.
Go for a run or something.
that's the plan. It's more of a brisk walk nowadays. But yeah. All right. Take care, guys. God bless.
You too. Thank you again. So Bye-bye. Much. Bye-bye.